Now it is time to play.
I came to bring the pain, hardcore from the brain. Let's go inside my astral plane. Find out my mental, based on instrumental. Record, hate, so I can write monumental methods. I'm not.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 3 of the Notorious POD. This is something I think I'm going to do, you know, quite often. And today, joining me is Gaylord DeWalt.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? How's it going, Rob?
How's it going, Gaylord? Now, one of the reasons is because I miss doing trilogues because of our fallen comrade, Matthew.
And yeah, he's gonna get better, and we'll get it rolling.
We'll get it rolling again.
When bands like release a secret album with like 2/3 of the members, and they the band something else. This will be like that secret, you know, the trilogues in the fish tank series.
It's kind of like, you know, I miss Trilogue so much, I decided I'm just going to do one with Gaylord.
Yeah, I appreciate it because I've been missing our chats as well. You know, I always look forward to them. So.
And I appreciate you coming on. But, you know, I assume everybody knows, anybody who's reading my blog or getting on knows who you are. But just in case.
Oh, yeah. I'm Gaylord. I'll do the intro for myself. I'm Gaylord DeWald, and I'm a strategist. I do web-related strategy work in the real estate industry. I write a column for Inman News, which I think now no longer has a paywall, so you can go read them until you fall asleep. And I live and work here in Burlington, Vermont. My studio is called Thought Faucet, and it's located at the Howard Space Center here in Vermont.
That's right. And you work with brokers, agents,
yeah,
in the real
works,
estate, and
the
outside
works
of real estate industry.
Yep, exactly. Most of my business is in real estate. You know, it's like probably 60% of my income comes from real estate. But I do some work with some government organizations and, you know, some larger businesses and smaller businesses, kind of all over the place as well. So it's a mishmash, but it's mostly real estate.
That's cool. So I think when we were talking about doing this little podcast, I was like, you know, Gaylord, you've been pretty active on a couple topics that's really been out there, you know, roiling things up.
Yeah.
So let's dive into the more fun one first. Is kind of how I looked at it.
Sure.
You wrote a really cool column on Inman, talk about the death of the social media rock star.
Right.
Give me like the 30-second, 1-minute, you know, précis on kind of what you're talking about there.
So the first thing, there's two pieces of it. One is that basically I read a great column or a great post by a woman named Amber Nussland that totally nailed like where social media is today and how people work in it. And I wrote my column as an excuse to point more people towards her article. So it's linked right at the beginning of it. It's an important one to read. So that was the first piece of it, is that what she wrote was just nailed it. And the second is that is sort of how we treat social media. Like for the last few years, social media has occupied a large portion of the marketing budget's brain. There's been a lot of chatter about it, but there hasn't been a lot of measurement so much or other things. And individuals have been able to achieve tremendous success for themselves and sometimes for their organization, but often for themselves. And that success has been portable with those superstars of social media, and maybe not helping out with the companies that they worked with. So it's kind of moving into the next phase of social, where like at some point we don't make a big deal about like who's done social media or social business. It just becomes a skill that is just sort of a part. Like we don't have like a big, oh yeah, I'm a Microsoft Word, you know, rock star anymore. Like we just expect everyone to know how to use it. And that's the way I think we're going with social media tools.
Okay, so let's pick up there. Because one of the things I thought about while looking at, you know, while reading your column,
mm-hmm.
and then looking at the woman you...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Amber. Yep.
Right, was, you know, it actually kind of goes a little counter to something that I believe for a long time, which is the whole idea of the Clue Train Manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
In that, I mean, if you look at Clue Train, the way that those guys were thinking about it, the notion was the, quote, company sort of starts to fade away. And
right.
It's all about these personal connections of people who work at that company.
Right.
But, you know, but they're out there sort of – and this is long before, quote, social media came along. So they're talking about things like forums.
No, I'm an original signer of the Clue Train.
You know, so it almost feels like – this notion now that the social media skills, quote unquote, would just be a skill that you have, I feel like runs counter in the sense that the whole notion behind Clue Train was company brand, company messaging, that stuff all goes away. And it's all individual brand and individual messaging, and you happen to work at that company. Do you think that's not true?
No, I don't see it that way, Rob. I think it's actually more aligned with I think that where we're going is actually more aligned with the Clue Train Manifesto, in that the social media rock star of the past two or three years has primarily been about, you know, to use the word that that gets bandied about, it's the most ugly word in social media, but brandividualism. You can thank David Armano for that word, by the way. Okay, brandividualism, right? The idea of like the individual personality kind of taking premise over the company.
Right.
Now, so we might want to look at, I see where you're coming from in terms of like, oh, well, if that goes away, then it goes back to customer service. It's like company, blah, blah. But I don't think it's an either or. I think there's a place in the middle or a new place wherein people can be human beings, still serve their customers, but without having to be a rock star, like where it's just like good customer service and it happens to be delivered through social channels, as opposed to I am a magnet of, you know, social media greatness and celebrity. And I've come to this conclusion, individually outside of Amber Nussland's, mm-hmm. you know, thing, just in terms of my own work. But it's worth noting, like, Amber used to work for Radiant 6, which is a company that measures results of things. So that's an analytics focus kind of cue there. But another one, like, I was in a car with an NGO or a nonprofit marketer the other day, and he was describing a nonprofit, which shall remain nameless, which hired a very popular Twitter personality to be their like CEO, because they're like, hey, this guy's got a lot of followers. It'll help extend the reach of our messaging and improve our donations. And the end result so far, and it's been long enough to notice, has been that his existing audience really isn't interested in this nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So they've got this outsized personality, but it's not bringing any business benefits to them. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen that in a number of different industries. So and it's not that celebrity marketing will go away or that it's no longer important, but that like celebrity marketing isn't right for everybody. Like the idea of let's build a big personality isn't like that's not necessarily helpful to each organization.
I mean, I guess I agree with the overall trend of that discussion. Mm-hmm. But again, the question I have is the big social media trends that were the most impressive to me personally, right, over the last, you know, couple of years,
mm-hmm.
has been how political organizations have mm-hmm. really adapted this.
Mm-hmm.
And the Obama campaign, I think at this point, everyone recognizes that they just literally kicked the crap out of the Romney campaign.
Yeah, their digital skills were far surpassing
light years beyond, right?
Yeah.
But in relation to this specific conversation, what was so interesting about how they leveraged social media, if you will, was they did not go for the rock star, right?
Right.
Instead, what they went for was huge masses of, you know,
Normal people. Yeah.
But at the same time, it wasn't as if the rock star thing didn't go away. I mean, they still went out and tried to get, you know, all of the big time rock stars. Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think like in a political campaign, you're automatically started out in a rock star scenario because you have a candidate, right? So you automatically have something like that.
Right.
In place. So I feel like political campaigns are a little bit special case, but not entirely. It's like, okay, well, we could just assume it would be like a CEO, mm-hmm. you know, the candidate's like a CEO.
Right.
And then do we have like some, you know, big like rock star social media manager?
But that's exactly my point. So in other words, what's so interesting about it is it wasn't as if, you know, President Obama, right, was personally mm-hmm. out there tweeting.
Right. Very, very rarely. Right, very rarely.
That was actually a case where you had the brand tweeting, You had brand engaging, and you know, and you know, like two, 3 years ago, and with part of this whole brand individualism or whatever the crap movement that was going on, the whole idea was that you needed to be personal, like, you know, brand can't.
Oh yeah, be authentic and be you know, relating or
right. It's stuff that I've said actually. You know, I remember saying like, look, I don't want to befriend some company because a company is not a person, right?
Right, right.
And then you look at what happened, you know, last year, and it's like actually. In terms of the social media efforts, right, a brand can be a player. And we don't – I mean, nobody knows who the actual person tweeting out, you know, messages for, you know, Obama for America, right? Nobody knows who that is.
Right. And even outside of politics, right, JetBlue, I'll pick them because I like to I like to fly with them. You know, we don't know who's running the JetBlue account, but they're there and they tweet back. And some of this – and again, it relates to a shifting landscape, right? When social media was new and nobody knew how to use Twitter, and it was like, yeah, well, here's what hashtags are and here's what a retweet is. Like before the button, like that was something that human beings invented. And but it's different now, right? It's different now. Like it isn't like someone who's got a bunch of followers or whatever. I don't know if you've ever been to like a tweet up that has like a bunch of people who were like really big 3 or 4 years ago and now are kind of like, you know, unknowns or whatever. But it's like that exists, you know? It's out there. Like people are like, oh yeah, like I was really like the biggest player in town in 2008, you know, but now like that there are genuine national figures involved, you know, politicians and sports people and stuff like that. It changes some, and this isn't something I guess I really thought about until we just started having this conversation, but it changes the nature of what does celebrity really mean, right? When there's only 100 people on Twitter, the guy with 30 followers is a celebrity. Mm-hmm. When there's, you know, millions of people, suddenly that person isn't really a celebrity anymore. Right. Back to normal celebrities get to be celebrities again.
Right.
And then it just becomes the same as celebrity marketing. Like, does it work or doesn't it? And certain, you know, if Michael Jordan, again, you know, it's just like a celebrity is a media channel. And I wrote about that in my column a little bit where, yeah, if you're trying to sell basketball shoes, then Michael Jordan is a good fit for your thing,
right.
Most likely because it's, you know, aligned or whatever. But, you know, if your campaign goal is something not sports related, then it's sort of like, well, does it matter that he's got a whole lot of people or not? Eh, maybe, maybe not.
So let's take it to the next place, you know, with respect to the article, which is I read it. I thought it was awesome. Right.
Sure.
But, you know, I was left wondering, OK, so how is this relevant to real estate?
Yeah, how is it? Well, here's how it's relevant to real estate from my perspective. In the last year, I've had at least 6 different companies talk to me about how do I generate a social media superstar for the real estate industry, right? Okay. At the brokerage level, I've seen this. At the franchise level, I've seen this. So people are expending time, money, and energy trying to figure out what to do to build a social media, you know, personality. And I think like we've seen in the past year or two, there was the Inman Next experience or Inman Next experiment at Inman,
right.
You know, that was driven by Katie and Chris, you know, who both great personalities and incredibly charismatic presenters. And I think we've also seen, I know the Keller Williams organization works, you know, to develop similar like superstar people to kind of put out there. And we know that in real estate marketing, there are certain personalities who are very charismatic and attract loyal followings online. And there are brokers and individuals and franchises that are attempting to recreate that kind of celebrity. Mm-hmm. And so I felt it's relevant to discuss in that column because I think that the landscape is shifting a little bit, that the world of building a great, you know, social media superstar, that might not be in the – you know, like Shadbolt always likes to say, in terms of skating where the puck's going to be, that might not be skating where the puck's going to be. So that's kind of, and it, again, it's not to say that building out a certain level of social media, you know, celebrity is, you know, bad or wrong or not entirely worthwhile, but it might there might be more effective ways of achieving business goals.
So you're still talking at the organizational level, though. You're talking about brokers and franchise. You're not talking about individual agents and what they're doing on Twitter and Facebook.
Correct. Yeah. That's exactly where I'm at. So, like, what does it make sense for an individual agent to become a social media superstar? Mm-hmm. You know, does it help them sell a house?
You know? I don't know.
Right. The data that I've seen, and I've seen some, says not really. You know, does it help them sell a house if they are actively involved in their local community's digital technology scene? That I have seen to be effective.
Uh-huh. So isn't this kind of like the whole Gary Vaynerchuk thing that you mentioned? I mean, you know, is there any data to show Gary's social media superstardom led to more wine sales?
Right. I don't know I'm sure that it has led to more wine sales than he would have had without it. But, you know, we'd have to look. I mean, just making it up. I don't have the numbers, you know, so it's not fair for me to say one way or the other because I don't know. And he could come back and say, well, it turns out that we sell, you know, 7 bottles of wine for every bottle that, you know, Trader Joe's sells. I kind of doubt that. Mm-hmm. But you do see that within the social media, you know, celebrity crowd of marketers, you do see frequently they will start with one particular industry or topic and then morph into effectively a media channel, which is, you know, VaynerMedia.
Right.
Which is good. I don't, you know, like,
hey, good for him.
Right? It's not a criticism. It's just recognizing that what is it that's being sold, right? That's all. What is it that's being sold? That's all I'm saying. And for agents and for brokers trying to grapple with, well, what do we do with social media? The stories that are being promoted and shared are ones about celebrity. And not as often are they ones about good customer service or good outreach or being in a clue train sort of way, being genuinely invested in your local community. Those stories are told far less often than stories of, hey, do this and you can be like Gary Vaynerchuk.
You know, there is something about that that's I don't even know if this is how to even address this, but I guess I'll just take a stab at it this way. The pursuit after, you know, the kind of the social media celebrity status,
mm-hmm.
especially in real estate, where agents are out there and they're being told by coaches or by, you know, whatever, consultants or whoever that, you know, you need to become this like sort of active on social media, become the social media personality, and you want to get as many friends and followers as you can because this will help your business. One of the weird things that it does from my standpoint is it makes everybody homogenous.
Right.
Because if you want to maximize the numbers, just like a celebrity, you know, it's like big news if some big, you know, actual Hollywood celebrity tweets something that's, you know, sort of politically incorrect.
Right.
And you want to avoid that. So, you know, if they're doing smart things, they're only talking about sort of safe topics.
Right.
And I feel like realtors do the exact same thing. You know, they end up talking about safe topics. Like they want all this popularity, they want celebrity, but they want to get to it by, you know, here's a picture of my lunch at the restaurant or, you know, some sports story, something that's really safe and non-controvertible, you know, non-controvertial.
Really vanilla.
It's very vanilla. And as when everybody's doing the same thing, I feel like it's actually kind of hard to become a celebrity at all.
Well, it just adds more noise to the channel, right? And we see this not just in social media marketing, right? This is all marketing.
All marketing, yeah.
Right? And even I'd even go so far as to say not just real estate marketing, but all marketing where people aren't sure what to do, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, if everybody gets the, like, here's how you become, you know, social media famous workshop, then they're all going to go do the same things and you know, and you'll end up with kind of predictable results. So, you know, that I think that is an issue, right? That's it. That's part of what I'm trying to, I guess, highlight a little bit. And some people do have it. Like some people are amazingly charismatic and good at what they do, right? Like I could never present with the same energy level as like a Chris Smith, right? He's just like off the charts. And same as like Tom Ferry, right? You see those guys on stage and they're like, man, they're like, they've nailed it. I don't have that, right? So someone could say to me, well, here's what Chris Smith says to do for all this stuff. Well, the truth is I'm not Chris Smith, you know? And some of those things are going to work for me. Some of those might be skills I could develop, but some of them, it's just not going to be me. You know, and that again rolls it back to Cloutrain manifesto stuff of like, what does authentic really mean? Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, there's like authentic with scare quotes around it, and authentic meaning like the real deal, the real McCoy, and you know, anywhere where people are concerned about authenticity, where authenticity becomes the most important factor, that's for me, that's always a sign of you know, that there may be issues. Right. You know, with the entire endeavor.
Right. Right?
You know, like, because it's like, okay, well, what do you mean when you say authentic? Like, when are you not yourself? And
it's a really good point, man.
Right? So
against the background of inauthenticity, then, you know.
Yeah, right. So it's like, okay, well, what does that mean? And it's like, so it's, that's, and there's, I mean, I'm fortunate, like, when I was an undergrad, like, this actually was a topic that I studied as an undergrad, was uh-huh. the idea of what is authenticity. So I've done a lot of reading about it, and it turns out to be really useful 10, you know, 15 years later.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, the idea of what's authentic or not really hasn't been even part of the general conversation. Like, it started really only, like, in the 1890s. Like before that, like no, it wasn't even a
right,
like,
because it was assumed, right?
Right, it was just assumed, right?
Yeah.
And it started first. It wasn't even about authenticity. It started with sincerity, right? People just talked about, you know, are you sincere or not? That's what mattered. And I think that for people who are pursuing social media, genuine, measurable success of increasing the meaningfulness of the relationships they have, approaching them sincerely is good. And that might be more beneficial than worrying about like what's authentic or not, or definitely following all like the rules about how to become socially famous or whatever. Like you see all the garbage, like the blog posts that always end in a question, or the headlines of posts that are always questions that can always be answered no, usually. you know, so and that really, it nails into it for me on like those questions aren't sincere.
Right.
Right. The questions at the end of the blog posts by people that are social media famous right. are not sincere. They don't actually give a shit
right.
if you answer that question.
Right.
They only ask that question because they're trying to get you to
comment.
To
yeah.
comment.
Yeah.
And they're not going to read your comment.
Right.
You know, some of them, I mean, that's not fair. Some of them will. But generally speaking, you and I both know they're not going to read it. They don't give a shit. It's an insincere question.
Right.
So when people are being encouraged to pursue these very specific tactics that are insincere, and yet at the same time being told about how important it is to be authentic, I start to look at it and I say, this here isn't going to work long term,
mm-hmm.
right? This sooner or later, the sunlight's going to hit this thing.
<You know? laughs> Sunlight is a disinfectant.
Yeah, you know, and and that sunlight is called analytics and
right.
measurement, and it's arrived.
Right.
And that's why I think Amber Nusslin's article is so important, much more important than mine. You know, mine is just the John the Baptist to her article.
Mm-hmm.
Hers tells people who are pursuing social media success and who maybe thought that they wanted to be a social media rock star what specific things they should do to make sense in the coming social media kind of environment.
Mm.
So.
Oh, that's really cool.
Not that I'm like passionate about this topic or anything.
Just a little bit, man.
But.
Just a little bit. Hey, so I'm going to switch gears, and there's no easy way to segue this one because
right.
they're completely unrelated. But there is something else that I know you've been, you know, very much a big part of it, and it's an area where, quite frankly, I don't think I understand.
Uh-huh.
So, and this is the whole canonical links discussion that's
yeah.
been popping up.
Yeah.
You know, I think I don't know who kind of really got that ball rolling. It might have been Eric Stegeman at Tribus.
It wasn't. It was me.
It was you? Okay.
Yeah,
that's right. It was you with the Inman yeah. thing. So
it was me.
Now everyone's talking about it. So
it was actually
again,
a late
brief,
night conversation.
When you say canonical links, you know, people just
yeah.
glaze over.
Yeah.
What is it? Why is it important?
So first I'll say I'm going to call it canonical tag. Right, as opposed to link, even though there is, in fact, a sort of link in it. But when people say canonical links, I think that they get nervous that there's going to be a clickable link on my webpage that's going to lead to my competitor's webpage. And that is not the case. There isn't going to be, there doesn't have to, it doesn't have to be coded that way. You don't have to have a clickable link from your webpage to any other page. So Canonical just tells computers, mm-hmm. there's two tags that I'm really been talking about and been dragged into way too many discussions about, but it's useful. There's two of them. One is the canonical tag, which tells computers where is the original version of this content. Mm-hmm. And then the other one that I think is just as important is the author tag or the authorship tag, which tells the search engines and other technologies who created this content. So they relate in a couple of ways. The most obvious one, and the one which I think gets most panties in a bunch, has to do with search engine optimization, right? So one of the well-known issues with search is the idea of duplicate content, which means if there's more than one version of a web page, which version does Google choose to put on the search engine result page? And real estate content is notorious for this, right? Because the MLS, by definition, is a page of content for a house, but it's the same everywhere it goes. It's the same on the brokers through right. the IDX. Right. It's the same on the aggregators through syndication. So by definition, it's duplicate content, and it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. Google hits that, and it doesn't know what to do, right? The search spider gets to that page, and it goes, says, man, there are 500,000 versions of this listing. Who do I pick?
Right.
And in a vacuum, it's going to, you know, sift through a bunch of different options and choose who it thinks should go there. If, on the other hand, all of those pages included a canonical tag reference that said, oh, the original version of this is over here mm-hmm. on website Q,
right.
then Google knows, okay, great, that's the one I'll pick to put on. It just knows.
Right.
It doesn't mean that other people don't, you know, have to take it down or anything like that. It just means that when Google's trying to pick which one to do, it picks the originating source. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't – and it's not like a guarantee either. Like Google could look at it and say, well, this is the original, but the version that's in the New York Times is the one I'm going to choose right. for whatever reason Google decides. So it's not like a guarantee here, but it's a strong, clear signal to right. Google. Where is the original version of this? So that's canonical. Authorship just lets Google know who made this document. And usually it could be connected to anywhere, but usually people connect it to their Google Plus profile because that's how they get the little picture of themselves next to a listing.
Right.
So if every – say you're a listing agent, and I know that that there's differences between whether this should go to brokers or agents, but I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah,
but I'm going to use agents because that's what I like. Bill Lublin, who's been going back and forth with me a bunch on this, prefers brokers. And I'm guessing that there's legal reasons for that. But since I don't know the law, I'm going to go with agent. And so say there's a listing and it's on Zillow and Trulia and Realtor and it's on my broker's website and it's on my competitor's website.
Mm-hmm.
And say every one of those had the author tag on it because and they all have the author tag on it. Then when the search results come up, whether it's the Zillow one or the Trulia one or the My Broker, whichever it is, mm-hmm. if the authorship tag is there, my little picture is going to be on that thing. The link is still going to go to wherever Google says
sure.
it's going to go. But since I'm the author, it's going to have my little picture there, which I think, you know, people like seeing their pictures and that's, you know, part of the thing there. So that's a piece of that. Part. There was something else I was going to say. Well, here's the crux of it. And the part of it that I'm personally the most interested in, I guess, is this is both of these things, authorship and canonical, are really just the digital versions of what we already do, right? We already tell people who wrote the listing, mm-hmm. right? On every listing, when you see it online, it's going to say who's the listing agent and who's the broker. So we're already telling people who wrote it. We're already telling people where it originated. So we're telling human beings one thing, but we're not telling computers.
Right.
And canonical and authorship allows us to tell computers the same thing we're already telling people. It has the biggest impact on search, but future technologies also matter, right? As all kinds of emerging tech comes out that's trying to understand the relationship between people, and objects and content, those technologies are looking for the canonical tag and they're looking for the author tag to help them figure that out. So it's, I'm basically just saying we've already got rules in place that say display the listing agent and brokerage to people. Why don't we say the same things to computers as well?
So let me ask you on sort of outside of real estate to try and get at what you brought up, which is the whole broker agent, that whole nonsense. And, you know, I don't know if you saw Matt Cohen's post about this, where effectively what he ended up saying is from a technology standpoint, this is very easy to do.
Absolutely.
But he was saying politically, though, opening this can of worms will lead to all sorts of battles.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to agree with him. But in light of that, one of the things I'm curious about is do you know how media organizations use authorship and canonical? What I mean is like the New York Times, for example. Mm-hmm.
Right. So the way that would work in a media example is the author of the article, like the journalist,
right,
would be the author. And the canonical would be themselves if it's their piece. But if it's, say, the AP or something like that, then the canonical would go somewhere else because it's not their originating piece. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And canonical actually comes along specifically to deal with that in many ways. So say I write a post on Thought Faucet, mm-hmm, and it's pretty good, and then the New York Times picks it up.
Right.
The New York Times has far more branding power and, you know, link capability than I do on my website. It's only going to be a matter of time before Google starts, it's going to consider the New York Times a more important version of it than mine. Canonical exists to sort of help mitigate that, mm-hmm, so that I can share my content with the New York Times and still, so they can show it to their readers, which would be great because their readers, you know, assuming they want to read it, but it doesn't, but I still get the value of having written it first to, in terms of search.
Well, so
go ahead.
That's a case where you've got two companies.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, I don't, you know, so if I'm the New York Times and I'm paying Paul Krugman a lot of money to write content for me.
Yes.
Would I not want the authorship to point to New York Times?
No, I specifically would not want the authorship to point to New York Times. I would specifically want that to be as varied as possible. So when we think about – we're getting like super geeky technical search stuff, but this is also part of why I would prefer to see the agent versus the broker. But again, I don't know the legal differences. But so Google is trying to understand, like from a search perspective, mm-hmm, it's trying to understand the relationship between individuals and content. Mm-hmm. And some individuals make better content than others, right? So it wants to know who are the individuals who tend to make good content. So that's one piece of it. The other one is at the website level, there's a difference between a website that has a multitude of voices contributing to it, mm-hmm, and a website that just has a single voice, mm-hmm, contributing to it. And not that one is, you know, necessarily inherently better than the other, but there's a difference.
Right.
So if I'm Google and I'm saying, okay, here's one website, the scale, size and scale of New York Times that has hundreds of different contributing voices on it, mm-hmm, at the website layer of how do I do the block rank for the New York Times that way versus a site the size of the New York Times that all is written by one person, then it's likely to enjoy the multitude of voices. And one thing to note here is that this multitude of voices thing will actually in some ways, because I know people are all like, oh, it's going to be the end of Zulia and Trillo or whatever. But I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case at all. And part of it being that, you know, it's good. Those are going to be websites with a multitude of voices.
So they're going to be like the New York Times, what you're saying.
In some way, yeah, there'll be a multitude of voices on those sites as a result of implementing this authorship. That would happen.
So,
go ahead.
So, does having the authorship tag result in any sort of SEO benefit?
It can, yes, because and it's like a tricky one, right? So, it has to do with the way that personalization search operates.
Okay.
So when you're logged into Google, which is increasingly everybody,
correct,
it sends you search results that are personalized for you. Now, if you have, you know, plus one or circled me or anything like that, you know, from your profile to the same profile that I'm using in my authorship sense, my profile is going to be content that I authored is going to show up more prominently in your search results.
Right.
Like it's going to rank better.
Right. Right.
So it's I'd say that there is a search play there, but it's also complicated in that it's like a blend. It's a search play if I've taken the time to generate relationships with you in Google's ecosystem.
Right.
So it's, you know, is it inherently going to do that? So that's the biggest benefit. That if you're not logged in to Google, we don't have a relationship, so it's not going to use that as a signal. It, my content still, say that listings that have my face next to them, you know, that have my authorship tag incorporated in them, tend to get clicked frequently, or Google is understanding that people are enjoying my content more than, say, other people's content. That's going to also send a signal. So agents who are good at making good MLS entries with good photos and good remark fields and stuff like that, it's going to benefit them, assuming that customers also like those things.
Well, the reason why I'm bringing this up, and I wanted to try and understand it from the media side first,
yeah,
is because clearly Paul Krugman is being paid a lot of money
right,
to post his stuff solely on the New York Times website.
Right.
Paul Krugman does not have his own Krugman blog, as far as I know,
right,
where it's being posted at the same time.
Right.
You know? They wouldn't pay him that kind of money. But when it comes – now, I guess even in media, you have syndication. So you would have, you know, Scott Adams creating a bunch of comics. Mm-hmm. And he's got his own website for it. And then he you know, has companies, you know, that will do the syndication for him.
Right.
Right. With real estate, at least over the last few years, what we've really seen is everybody is their own publisher.
Yeah.
So the brokers have a website and the agent has a website.
Yes.
In that scenario, I mean, you know, what the New York Times would do, what you would recommend, do it at the agent level. So the agent has the authorship.
Yep.
And I suppose the canonical tag would then go to the agent's own website.
Well, and I think this is the area that's, you know, most up for debate. Right. I feel that the authorship should definitely be the agent. But, you know, I'm not a real estate I don't practice. So I think that's a conversation people should be having. Mm-hmm. On the canonical front, I would say whoever owns the data. Right. And nobody wants to talk about that, you know. Right. So that's a question nobody wants to deal with.
I think everybody wants to talk about it. I think everyone should talk about it.
Yeah.
Right? Because fact of the matter is the broker owns the data.
Owns the data. Right. And that's – so my gut is that the broker – as a consultant, I think that the broker has the most the broker could probably realize the most benefit from – more than an individual agent would. Mm-hmm. And then the reason why I guess I would also like to see the canonical reference to the broker site is that also allows the broker to brokerages could distinguish themselves one way or the other in this regard. So they could say, well, all the canonicals are going to point to our brokerage. Say that's the default setting.
Sure.
Some brokers may say, agents that work with us, we're going to send the canonical reference for listings that you create to your website. And other brokers won't. Other brokers say, nope, no matter what, they're always coming to my site. Thank you very much.
Right.
And that allows people to do business in the way that they feel is best.
Right.
It allows agents to say, you know what, I want to work with a broker who is going to let me have the canonicals to my listings, go to my blog. And other ones that'll say, you know what, I want to go to a broker that's just going to kind of handle all that crap and I don't have to deal with it.
Okay.
So that's the reason that I favor the broker is that it would then allow the brokers it allows people to make business decisions, you know, on their own without
it's great the variety.
Least amount of, you know, policy wrangling.
Okay,
but
so
understand it would be a really emotional conversation.
Technical question before, because that particular issue is going to be massively political and problematic.
Yeah, I think
technically, though, most people who are discussing this are only talking about Zillow, Trulia, and, you know, right? The aggregators.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the basic notion they have is if the industry were to implement this across the board, so authorship would point to the, you know, let's say it's kind of your thing. Authorship points to the listing agent, and the canonical tag points to the listing broker who owns the data.
Right.
It seems to me that the sense from the industry is that this would somehow benefit them, their websites at the expense of Zillow and Trulia and Realtor.com, right? And from what you're saying, technically, that may be the effect that it tends to have.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, okay. I think in a, from a search perspective.
Right. From a just SEO standpoint.
From an SEO standpoint, I think that it would favor the – from an SEO standpoint, it would favor whoever had that canonical.
Okay. So what then – what people has not yet discussed though is what would be the impact of that on IDX?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is – and this is the part that I think is going to be even stickier is I think it should be implemented everywhere. Right. Mm-hmm. In my perspective, and again, I'm not a realtor, so it's not fair for me to say how realtors should do their business. They should have these conversations and make up their own minds. But I would suggest that you apply it consistently. So because the idea here is simply to tell computers the same thing we tell people.
Right.
Right? We already have the listing agent's name and brokerage on my IDX feed, even though it's tiny and whatever.
Right.
We already have that. And so I would say this just becomes a piece of how that system operates in both syndication and with IDX. And I realize that you know, there would have to be a lot of conversations about that.
But the technical impact of this would be, right, in your opinion, the IDX websites would essentially, you know, lose.
I'm not sure that I would say it that way. What do you mean?
In other words, look, if the whole if you implement canonical and authorship and these types of things, right?
Yep.
The SEO impact is it tends to favor the listing broker who owns it the favor, data.
Yeah. Here's what,
and
here's
this
what,
favors Zillow, Trulia, and Realtor.com, right?
Yeah.
Tends to. I'm not saying it's all of a sudden Zillow.
It's not going to be like a switch that gets turned on or not, but it would favor – who it's going to favor, I'll just like cut to the chase, right? If, from a search engine perspective, right. It's going to favor – websites which receive the canonical reference for the most listings.
Right.
So the people who are most concerned or would have, you know, should voice their opinion most strenuously would be like buyer's agents.
Correct. That's exactly what I'm getting at. So, you know, there's
like who have
thousands, there are thousands of brokers and agents out there who are completely relying on IDX to be the lead gen source.
Yeah.
And they're completely relying on it and they make very big SEO plays on it. And, you know, a few years back, there was a massive political fight at NAR level around the whole notion of search engine. Remember the search IDX? Well, after post-canonical tags, it seems to me, unless I'm totally missing something, right, one of the impacts will be that IDX will no longer be, you know, quite as valuable from an SEO standpoint.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, IDX isn't that valuable for most players anyway, like because it's all duplicate listing.
I'm telling you, the agents are.
I know that people believe that it is, and people are sold on the idea that it is, but it's in precious few instances where it actually is. Like if you have someone like Galen Ward working on your system, or someone like Jack Miller working on your system, then yes, absolutely, the IDX is helping you out. You know, but. But in, you know, 80-90% of the instances, it's not helping them at all. Mm-hmm. I get where you're coming from on that.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure because, you know, I could comment on the political side of this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an issue. Right. The question then comes down to the question sort of – it's a conversation that I would like to see happen in terms of people deciding the way the system is right now. The way everybody's websites are today is that real estate agents and brokers, like the real estate side of the real estate industry, is not sending a clear message to computers of all types, not just Google, but all computers, about who and where that data originates.
Right.
And so it's not sending a clear signal. There are other entities that aren't in the real estate transaction side of the real estate business who are very skilled at sending clear signals through digital channels.
Right.
And so if people feel that it is worthwhile to have people on the transaction side of the industry, sending a clear signal, then that should be done. Someone said to me on the phone, because I'm getting a lot of calls about this, someone said to me on the phone, it's almost like the industry is – kind of being held hostage by a bunch of agents who don't have any listings, and not just like buyer. They aren't even just complaining about buyer's agents there, right? Like, we're talking about people who aren't buyer's agents but don't have any listings.
Right.
How many real estate agents have any listings? You know, what percentage have any listings at all? Mm-hmm. And I think it does make sense for them to be concerned about this idea of, oh, well, what are we going to do if this happens? At the same time, I do believe firmly that those kinds of organizations could still compete in an SEO play. They would just have to do it in a way that doesn't involve using the listing data.
Right.
And it's not that – the other important piece of this, like, to not confuse with it, is that it's not it wouldn't prevent anyone from showing the property on the
sure.
web. Right?
Sure. We're just talking about SEO.
Yeah, it's like the customer experience of going to the website would be exactly the same once they're on the website.
Right.
And part of why I think this is, you know, when people say, well, I think this is going to be bad for ZTR, I actually think it's going to help because like, and Stegman brought this up. He's like, well, they even mentioned in their 10K filing the thing about the, you know, that they could get their data cut off or whatever. And it's like there's a. I think that there is downward pressure on the value of these companies based on their poor relationship with their data source. Mm-hmm. And something like this would remove the search engine optimization part of their challenge.
Right.
You know, from their customer, right? If their customer is people, you know, agents in the case of Zillow,
right,
or agents now in the case of Trulia, now that they bought their thing, and right, you know, like, that's their customer base. And if they could have a stronger relationship with them, I think that obviously if you worked in the SEO departments of those companies, you'd be saying this is bad for the company. Mm-hmm. But it may be bad for the SEO departments.
But not for the company as a whole.
But it might be good for the company as a whole. Like, they might have a better relationship with their customers as a result of saying, hey, I'm going to focus on the brand power of Zillow.
Right.
I'm going to focus on the brand power of Realtor,
right,
and I'm going to let that drive my business. And I'm going to sit, you know, share that with my customers, and, you know, we'll all ride unicorns into the sunset.
So on that, and I know we're kind of at the end of time here, so let me ask you this, my last question.
Sure.
As far as you know, do these authorship and canonical tags, do they have any impact on mobile?
They have they do. They do have an impact because at the search level, like, it's still the, like, for mobile.
In other words, like, when I say mobile, I mean like mobile apps, you know,
yeah,
or
for mobile,
iStore or App Store, yeah, or is one of those.
Oh, not so much for that. No, I don't think so. I'd have to dig into that, I guess. But no, it's basically just a, like, any other meta tag in a document that just says, hey, who wrote it?
Right.
Who's the author and where did it come from?
Right. And this is a Google thing, right? I mean, Google's the guy; those are the guys who invented it.
Yeah, and the search is the part that people care the most about.
Right.
But as other systems, and I know that this is true, as emerging technology is trying to make sense of the relationship between houses in the real world and their digital manifestations in an MLS listing,
mm-hmm,
they're reading these documents.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things – and you can start sending them a signal about where they come from or where they go to, and then programmers can start doing interesting stuff with it. They can say, hey, if you want to know, like, how many listings does this person have, we could scrape for the author tag.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Suddenly we could start building some really cool shit.
Right.
So which, you know, or scary shit, I guess, depending on
depending on your position, depending on what you're doing, right?
But the search is the part that is, and I think understandably so, captivating people's right attention in this. But it's not just search. It's beyond search. It's just about how does technology understand these documents?
Right. I was just curious. Like I said, I mean, I think those are all developments that's going to happen at some point.
Right.
I was just wondering, again, getting out of real estate, like, you know, if a restaurant has an authorship and a canonical tag, does the Yelp app use those tags? And my sense is that they do not.
Yeah, my sense is that they wouldn't.
Right? I mean, Google uses it, sure. So the Google, you know, app, if there's mm-hmm Google, the Maps app perhaps might use it, but, you know.
Yelp may begin to use it, though. Like, Google's using it because it helps them return better results to people.
Right.
Right. So Yelp might use it because Yelp wants to return better results to people.
Right. And that was it's like I didn't right? understand. So
yeah. So yeah.
All right. This has been certainly an education. I really
Thanks for having this call. This was a lot of fun. Yeah. You know, and I hope that I didn't make things more confusing on this.
Oh no, man. I think
as much as I can to keep it as straightforward. And I would encourage, you know, anyone who hears this podcast to, you know, let me know if you have kind of questions about it. And if you disagree, because there are people who have good reasons to disagree, please write them, you know, please write them down and let everybody know. My hope is that people just have these conversations and come to a greater understanding of, you know, why should we tell people one thing and computers another thing? And I think it'll be healthy for the industry as a whole, including the aggregators.
No, believe me, I think this conversation will continue. But like I said, from my purposes, there's a lot of confusion mm-hmm. as to what the actual technology is. And I just wanted to make sure that we understood it.
Yeah. And yeah, absolutely.
Hey, thanks so much, Gaylord.
Yeah. Thank you, Rob.
Great talking to you, man.
All right.
All right.
Bye. Peace out. Driving Miss Daisy, how to keep in mind now I got mine, I'm swayed. Is it real, son? Is it really real, son? Let me know it's real, son, if it's really red. Something I can feel, son, loaded up and kill one. Want to feel, son, if it's really real. When I was a little stereo, I listened to some champion. I always wonder when I would be the number one. Yeah. Now you know.